This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bors. So today President Joe Biden makes his first foreign trip, has landed in the UK and is now meeting the Prime Minister. James, what have the first moments of their meeting for the first time looked like?
So they've done a kind of photo op, Joe Biden saying that you've got something in common, both married above their station. But there is obviously an elephant in the room now after the extraordinary splash of the Times this morning about a kind of formal démarche from the US diplomatic representative in London now. Biden hasn't yet appointed an ambassador to David Frost to basically say that you guys are endangering peace in Northern Ireland if you actually use the protocol. White House is concerned about this. Cool it. And then the kind of the carrot, which is a carrot that, you know, lots of people on the EU side have urged the US to make, which is to say, look, you, if you align with the EU's SPS rules to ease checks in Northern Ireland, that wouldn't preclude a US free trade deal. Now, I think it's quite in the reaction from the US side this morning, they are clearly trying to walk this to a more moderate position. It is quite something to have a démarche, especially ahead of a G7 summit, especially when you consider how, in terms of Joe Biden's big goals, in terms of trying to get the G7 countries to say, you know, Russia and China are threats and we must unite, you know, the UK is as closely aligned with the US position as any member of the G7. And so I think you see the UK, the US, not pushing. I think the Jake Sullivan position, as expressed yesterday, which was more nuanced, a bit more subtle and a bit more and different in tone, it is more where the US would like to be. They're obviously, that this démarche happened is indicative of the levels of concern in the White House and just how tricky a full-blown row over the Northern Ireland Protocol could be for US-UK relations.
I mean, James, this happened behind closed doors earlier this week and the Times scooped it. So was the White House thinking that this just would never come out and say it was a kind of warning behind the doors? Or do they, I mean,
I think it's quite clear from the Times story today that this has come from the UK side, not deliberately. So the US was not planning to advertise this happening. I think the US was planning to advertise on this trip that it has concerns about the Northern Ireland Protocol. That's something that, you know, that I think it's not a secret that Dublin have been lobbying quite hard for them to kind of push, and there have been EU sources saying that they think that, you know, the US is the best way of pulling the UK into line here. Now, there is a kind of paradox here, because the US position is all about the Good Friday Agreement, and the UK argument is that it is the implementation of the protocol in its current form that is threatening the Good Friday Agreement. But the problem for the UK is that when it comes to the Good Friday Agreement, Washington essentially defers to Dublin on whether it is being protected or not. And I think, you know, the Good Friday Agreement talks about the totality of relationships on these islands, north, south, east, west. But I think it is fair to say that from a Washington perspective, it's much more about north, south than east, west, which causes problems for the UK, because the UK's argument is that the current situation is unbalanced because too much is falling east-west, and that is causing upset.
Katie, how has the UK side taken this? Obviously, it didn't happen today, but, you know, it's a rocky start to what's meant to be Boris Johnson's diplomatic coup.
Yes, it's not the front page they would have wanted. I think there's potentially a chance that because it's come to a public head in this manner, it might suggest to the US side that they almost want to be a little bit less robust publicly at the conference because there's already this hanging over it. But it's not what they wanted. And I think, as James said, they definitely, ministers were taking heart yesterday from the official intervention in the fact that it wasn't too prescriptive on what the government needs to do on the Northern Ireland Protocol. It was almost leaving it to both sides. We know David Frost is in the meeting that took place today. And I think that is interesting because when it comes to EU leaders, at least, I don't think David Frost is seen as the ideal accessory for a charm offensive. But maybe it'll work on Joe Biden in a different way. And I think that the UK side believe that actually you do need to have figures like David Frost in the room, not only because he is in charge of the Brexit relations, but two, because I think there is a genuine sense on the UK side that if they can explain the situation to the US, they'll be more sympathetic to their argument here. So, and you will have ministers comparing it to the idea that you would not be allowed to move, you know, a steak from one state in the US to another. Yeah, and another country was telling you that, do that. And I think they think that once you break down, particularly the chilled meat or the, you know, the sausage wars, it's come to be known what it's really about. I do think they think the US will be more sympathetic to their cause. Now, they might be misguided if we look at obviously the Times front page today and the fact that Joe Biden has such strong links to Ireland and therefore is on friendly terms with the Irish government already. We haven't had too many hints. I think when you look at what's happened so far at the G7, we have had a meet and greet with Boris Johnson and Joe Biden, where Joe Biden said he had one thing in common with Boris Johnson, but it is not their love of the talking about issues on Northern Ireland. Instead, it is the fact that he said they had both married above their station. So it was a compliment aimed at the Prime Minister's new wife, Carrie Simmons, rather than Boris Johnson. I think Boris Johnson will be hoping that they can find more they have in common.
Well, Katie, let's stick on Carrie Johnson, as she is now known in her first public outing. The G7 is one of those diplomatic trips that seems more like a family get-together with a family photo and the wives coming along, and Carrie Johnson
partners,
has...
Everyday sexism.
Okay, but is there any... Are there
yes,
any
Angela Merkel's husband.
Of course. Sorry, that's my bad. Mea culpa. So,
thank God we have...
Classic Cindy the sexist.
James here to check the numbers. Sorry, as you were saying
anyway,
to me.
Yes, no, so it's her first public outing in a quite an important role. How do you think she'll do? I mean, she's got fabulous dress today.
I think it's onto the second dress already, actually. So the day is not over when it comes to the wardrobe. I think it's an interesting one, as you say. It's one of the few times when actually the Spice does have a more public role of all those leaders. And there are some reports, I think, in the Mail on Sunday saying actually one of the reasons that they did decide to have this wedding when they did, you know, a few weeks ago, was to make it less awkward at the G7, formalise the role, which might sound silly, but I do think when it comes to some of the world leaders, so in this report, they're saying actually when it comes to a country like Japan, they're very traditional, so it'd be harder to have a girlfriend hosting all these people than a wife. No. I'm sure some people listening will say, well, that's ridiculous. But it does mean it's her first outing as Carrie Johnson. And I think, as I said before in this podcast, I think it's interesting if you just look at the, you know, the amount of column inches that have been written about what Carrie Simmons thinks privately, about feuds with the various factions, what Vote Leave were saying, what others were saying, what influence this person has, how people in Number 10 who are quite senior are close to her. And I think it hasn't helped, I think, for her, the fact that it's also behind the scenes and she doesn't really have a public voice, because it means that you are relying so heavily on these various source quotes. So I do wonder if the fact that it is now she is in this role means that she can have a more public facing presence. And I don't mean that in the sense that she's going to suddenly be his environment advisor, which I think has been also floated in the press. But instead, the fact that you can do things like this, and it's almost, I think, to be out there in public could actually help a bit when it comes to, you know, is this person actually running the government? And then I think, I suppose, on what to see for the rest of the G7, I think we were going to see more obligatory, you know, photo ops of the various partners, not just wives. And there's been some interesting, you know, instead of, you know, well, how did Sherry Blair do it? How did all these former spouses do it? But she is, I think, the youngest spouse at this event. So I imagine we'll have a fresh approach to some of her predecessors.
And James, back in Westminster today, Matt Hancock was up in front of MPs for his retaliation to Dominic Cummings' hearing from a few weeks ago. Did he say anything interesting?
So I think there was quite a bit of nervousness among allies of Matt Hancock that there might, at the last minute, Dominic Cummings might take to Twitter and say, here is the documentary evidence to back up.
Here are the receipts, as the kids say.
Yeah, the claims that he made at his select committee appearance, when, if you remember, he suggested that Matt Hancock should have been fired 15 or 20 times, but the cabinet secretary had lost confidence in Matt Hancock's honesty, and a whole other series of allegations. And that didn't happen. And I mean, obviously, the timing with the G7 has actually inadvertently benefited him, but I think people thought that Matt Hancock would be fighting for his kind of political life at this committee appearance. It didn't feel like that today in Westminster. And I think he said some things. I thought one of the most remarkable things he said was that a Chinese report about asymptomatic transmission of the virus was dismissed as a mistranslation back in January, which I think is quite remarkable and concerning. And there's also, I think, another interesting question going on here, which is, he sounded like Dominic Cummings in one regard, which is expressing concerns that the view among kind of government scientific advisors and the academic scientific community in the UK who were talking to the government was too benign, and that, you know, he was more worried, and he felt that the border should have been shut, but that, you know, he didn't feel confident. I mean, to take on the official scientific advice was a big thing, and he didn't feel confident in doing that. I mean, that perhaps explains why Matt Hancock has become such a convert now to this idea of, you know, almost having a kind of Australian-style summer, and the idea that you can't, no one's going out of the country and no one's coming into the country. An idea, the popularity of which seems to vary heavily depending on how sunny or rainy it is outside. I still think that for Matt Hancock there are some difficult questions when it comes to the public inquiry and the like. But I think the moment of immediate danger for him appears to have passed.
Katie, is that the limit then of the ramifications from Dominic Cummings' hearing? I mean, it's been quite a few weeks now since he gave evidence to the select committees, and he hasn't given more evidence about to back up his claims. It seems like the news has moved on.
I mean, I think if you look at recent polls, Tory poll lead is still strong. It isn't the case that Dominic Cummings has torpedoed Boris Johnson by any means. I do think all this stuff, there always seems to be quite a big focus on immediate cut through. And I think there are a few events that do create that. We saw that with Barnard Castle, with Dominic Cummings on that trip. But often things take a bit longer to filter through. And I think at the moment, generally speaking, Boris Johnson is still ultimately having quite good political weather. You still have a vaccine rollout, which lots of people think is very successful. That might be pushed a bit if, when we get this announcement on Monday, you know, things are delayed. If the variant, you know, there's ways that this could move around a bit. But for now, I think that ultimately most people are just quite happy to be able to leave their homes. Do things again. You know, it still had high viewing figures in terms of Dominic Cummings, but a lot of people, I think, in terms of learning lessons from the pandemic, people are actually thinking about the future more. So I don't think it has damaged the government immediately in the way that some feared it would. I think that also if you look at where things are going now, I mean, I still think there are people around Dominic Cummings who think he does have the receipts, as you put it, Cindy, and that this could happen at any time. So it's almost like a looming thing. But I definitely think people in government seem much calmer. And as for Matt Hancock's position, obviously, there are serious questions about care homes, but I think there are probably two things which mean that, as James said, today just didn't feel like that blockbuster moment. Can he get through it to such a degree? And that's not to reduce the importance of the things that he is being asked to talk about on things like care homes. But I think the fact that there are care home issues in terms of the other devolved administrations, I mean, it wasn't a singular thing that happened in England, which Matt Hancock was in charge of. And then secondly, I just think on a political level, the fact that Dominic Cummings has gone so strongly for Matt Hancock, when Dominic Cummings has also gone really strongly for Boris Johnson, just means that if anything, I mean, number 10, if were they to take action against Matt Hancock, it would suggest that Dominic Cummings might have a point about Boris Johnson. So, and I think as someone put it to me, you know, in number 10 at the moment, it's very, you know, my enemy's enemy is my friend, is how they summed up the mood of that building, which I think does give you a hint of probably how various relationships are going.
Well, do keep listening to Coffee House Shots, even if you are out there enjoying the sun. Thanks for listening, and join us again for our next episode tomorrow. And remember, if you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review us.